Betsy Thomas and Michael McKibben. That's Tylan Douglas Gabriel, Michael McKibben, to give you an update of what we see going on in the great information war and what's going on that battlefield. Now, I've got a lot of emails from folks. Some of you are very concerned. You don't know if Trump is going to make it all the way, but we didn't come this far, and he didn't take out so many people, all contenders, one at a time, over the last 4 years for us to get here and spirit stop us at a dead end. No, folks, we are going the whole way. We're going for winning. And when we rip open 2021 with President Trump at the helm, you are going to be just amazed at how amazing life in America is going to be and around the world. But having said that, now we need to get back into the mines, back into the trenches, and find out what Michael and Douglas have brought us. And Douglas, you recently posted an article on Seidel. And of course, Michael, you're posting and researching and mining all the time.
Oh, that's for sure. Seidel just led me back to the stench of British rot. I suspected it would have to be connected to SGO, Smartmatic, and Mark Malik Brown, and it certainly does go right back to the City of London. And Seidel, who bought Seidel, first off, it's so confusing that you can't follow it because they have obfuscated it by creating companies with the same name in different places with specific distinctions. An Irish company, Paragon Group Limited, Irish branch, bought Seidel. And then Seidel says, oh, they didn't have anything to do with the election. Go to their website. They affected 78 million people in this last election. Not only that, they controlled the data analysis, which certainly did leave this country just through its, because basically all the computing was being done in Frankfurt and in Barcelona. So what we found out was I only did the research in that because somebody had said that the Swiss post office had bought the full rights to Seidel when it went bankrupt in May of 2020. Well, that's not correct. They bought a version of it, then they transformed that version of it, and then it was found out that it was still full of security holes. So anybody that has worked with Dominion, Smartmatic, or anybody who has worked with Seidel, which is now Paragon Group, these groups have already been found to be involved in fraudulent elections all over the world. So we shouldn't be doing any business with them. So we can tell you what was going to happen. We didn't know it was going to happen this way, but we told you that the election wouldn't be understood until the end of December, and that, in fact, it'll have to go to the Supreme Court. We didn't know under what auspices, but we predicted that a long time ago. And so that's what's happening. And people are freaking out, Michael. And your research has been showing that the Soros bought and paid for Secretary of States and basically attorney generals are so corrupt. And also the federal government, the federal judges that are being appointed to look over these fraud cases for the election are so British groomed. It makes you want to vomit.
It sure does. So we focused on two. Well, we had already focused on Buchvar, the Secretary of State Buchvar in Pennsylvania, and discovered her massive connections to the British. But then we started looking at what was going on in your neck of the woods in Michigan, in Detroit. And there we discovered that the two judges that were assigned to this Sidney Powell case are massively connected through Wayne State University with the British Privy Council, and specifically a, what was his name? Sir, he's now a Lord. Oh, I just lost the name of the Baron. But anyway, this Baron is very closely tied with Lord Mark Malik Brown, and therefore with Dominion. So doesn't it make sense that they are going to give this case to some of their minions to, as we now know in their legal strategy, give it to their minions and let them spin it and stall it until everybody gets tired of talking about it. And that appears to be what they're going to do here. And they'll probably just stonewall it until it gets kicked up to the Supreme Court, which, by the way, I need to remind everyone who has looked at our research over the last three or four months that there was a in 1912, a suffragette and reporter by the name of Lillian Scott Troy actually published the 24-step strategy that the Pilgrim Society was going to use to reincorporate America into the British Empire. And point number one was to take control of the U.S. Supreme Court, to use their influence to do that. And isn't it interesting that in the end, this may end up, this whole question of this election may end up in the Supreme Court in the hands of Justice Roberts, who is a British royal, basically a British peer through the Knights of Malta. He's a Knight of Malta. Isn't that just poetic?
Well, it is, and it's shocking that with the hanging chads, it had to go to the Supreme Court. But this time, it's going to go to the Supreme Court because of the fraud. 11,000 signed affidavits, sworn and signed, are enough evidence that the Supreme Court won't be able to look at it. So they're not going to be able to make a anything but a broad determination. And that determination could be made in a variety of ways. Federal archivist could simply say in the National Register, we're not going to accept these electoral votes because we've seen the fraud. The Senate, through being led by Vice President Pence, when they accept the electoral votes, they don't have to accept them. It can be contested then and say that it's fraudulent. Trump can bring and is bringing lawsuits basically stating the fraud, and he has every right and standing to do so. So this will go to the Supreme Court, and there's no way that they can make any specific determination. They're going to have to simply say there was fraud. We can't say anything more than that, and therefore it has to go to our Congress to determine it. And the president is determined by a vote, one vote for every state that is either Republican or Democratic. And right now the Republicans in the House have, 30 votes? So they'd win immediately. So if it goes to the House, it isn't Nancy Pelosi who conducts it. It is simply a vote, one vote per state, and that will go Trump's way. And then the vice president goes to the Senate. And so what's happening in Georgia is critical, because if the Republicans lose the Senate, then they could have something weird happen with what the Senate might do in relationship to their duty, which is to then vote for who the vice president should be.
Okay. Now I need to ask you something about the Georgia situation. What did Einstein call insanity? How did he define insanity? Do you remember?
Oh, was it he who said that when you keep doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results?
Right. If you keep doing the same thing over and over, you're going to get the same result. And the logic to me is just lost on me, that how smart people in Georgia can say, we're going to have this runoff election and we're going to use the same bogus system that we're now ripping apart in the other room. How can they do that? They have to put their people together and get paper ballots and do it the way we need to have it done right now. And they can do that.
And we do not want to give up the positions and those seats. And that's why I'm pushing back on Lynn Wood for him saying not to go and vote. No, Lynn, you've got to look at the big game, and we've got to hold those positions, because later when the fraud comes out, it'll be seen that Loeffler was as much involved in the scam as everybody else. And then that position can shift over to someone else who can hold it for us. So we don't want to lose the position.
I understand, but that part of it's kabuki theater. It's just going to be who can play the best kabuki theater to rig this next data collection and see if they can make it work, when in fact all these people have to do is start using their noggins and say, let's go to paper ballots and let's count them with bipartisan unbroken chain of custody and get done with this. This isn't rocket science. but they've made it rocket science, and therefore they've thrown it to experts. They've thrown it to, quote, the professionals, which are basically these corrupt bureaucrats. And we throw it out there and hope that the vote might be counted correctly. This is basic math. We all learned this in elementary school. What we've got here are these corrupt algorithms in the voting machines that count fractional ballots. And therefore, they just continually flip ballots back and forth until they get the result they're looking for. We know that's the way the software works. So why are we going to use it again in Georgia?
And why should we allow any of those machines to be connected to the internet where they can then be hacked, manipulated, or a thousand ways adjusted? So the entire Dominion, Smartmatic, SGO Smartmatic, Hart InterCivic, ESS, all of them, they got to go, and their owners have to be prosecuted for what Trump is now pointing out is a national security issue. Same thing going on with the mainstream media and all their lies and the way that they conducted the entire fraud right in front of our eyes. And he's trying to get rid of the Decency and Broadcasting Act to Section 230 by adding it into the National Defense Authorization Act because of a national security issue. So it isn't about antitrust that these big companies and the mainstream media may come down. It may come down because they no longer have the protections. And that has been the angle that we thought that they would go all along. So what you have here is mob rule. Imagine how many people we have already seen were in on the conspiracy to make sure Trump wasn't reelected, and they would have reelected a dog if that's who the Democrat Party would have put up. And they did. They put up Joe Biden, who is, we won't call him what he really is. But anyway, this was using machine intelligence. So anytime you're going to put these statistics into a machine, expect that the evil aspects of machines will be manipulated by those people who are in control of them. That's just a given. That's like saying that you go on your Google account or you go on anything and you think you're not being watched, or on your phone you're not being listened to. Then you're silly. Of course they are. Anything that is digitized can be controlled, and they're controlled by the people who invented them. In almost all cases, these things were weaponized by the Highlands Forum, by InQtel for the CIA, and by DARPA for the Department of Defense. And these voting rigging software and machines, particularly the laser optic machines, as we pointed out recently, that OpTech was from the beginning a DARPA project. It was military controlled. It was a Canadian company, strangely enough, so it would be British connected, that was basically driven by U.S. taxpayer money through DARPA. That's who invented OpTech, and now it's in its third or fourth iteration, and it's still, as Sidney Powell called it, the DNA of this digital election rigging. And so what I want to point out is that recently in Georgia, they showed the films of people everything has to be shut down because a toilet overflowed and everybody has to leave, except for a few select people who started pulling out suitcases on wheels, you know, like carry-on luggage, of ballots that then they went to the machines and they started inputting them. And they probably input them over and over and over again. And they were probably fake ballots to begin with, probably printed in China, because we know that China printed millions of ballots that were flooded into this country because they were caught coming in through at the border multiple times. And so a lot of those could just be any kind of fake ballot that a Dominion machine will read. And since they had the signature verification part turned down to zero, every single ballot could be simply run through the machine over and over and over again. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. You got to look at who is in control of this and since when. This was since the 70s. Venezuela was all of South America was about trying to keep CIA-approved dictators in charge of South American countries. And they consider that like part of the Marshall Plan, that, you know, we just had to control South America so that we would have our own security here in America. Well, the CIA has intervened in probably three dozen foreign elections that we all know of, and that means they're probably intervening in all of them. And now it's happened here in America. We have a George Soros paid for group of Secretary of States who are now in the swing states, the critical people in the whole country to state whether or not the most obvious fraud in U.S. election history is a fraud. And they say it isn't, and they certify it and say it's all fine. But now we find out that the governor of Georgia, the Secretary of State, the certain attorney generals in other states, other Secretary of States received money by getting Dominion machines into their districts and into their states, and they got payoffs. And Sidney Powell says she actually has pictures of the checks and of the of the exchanges and of some of the checks where these people who are politicians who were paid off. So when it comes to stating whether you're going to accept the Electoral College vote, how could you with this much fraud? Now, are these legal motions being made in Pennsylvania, in Georgia, in Michigan, in Wisconsin, Arizona? Are they going to go forward? Probably not. They're going to go to really bad judges. That is to bring it to everyone's attention so that when the truth is found, that our government must state, yes, there is fraud, because we understand that with the 11,000 affidavits and the other documentation, it's a million pages. It's about a million pages of fraud. How could the Supreme Court not rule that it was fraud and then go to the default that is built into our Constitution, built into our government, the proper way to handle it? And that's what we described earlier at the top of this broadcast. So it is the most unsettling of times that I've ever seen politically and with the plandemic. And remember, the plandemic is part of basically stealing the election, let's just call it. So the plandemic was part of that. That was the last thing they had that they could pull out to attack Trump before they just went full hog into this. And you got all these Democrat anarchists at all levels. We have them on film. We have their names. We know who they are. We have the people turning them in. It cannot be ignored.
If I could share one very painful lesson I've learned about answering your question, how could they look at this and not rule that the election was fraudulent? And it's a magical term that the judicial system has created for itself called judicial discretion. And this particular discretion allows a judge in a case to essentially overrule evidence of any kind and rule however that judge wants to rule. And they use the term judicial discretion. So even if they're violating precedent, patent, and even if they're violating statutes, first of all, they're not liable for their fraud, by the way. That was a precedent set. It's not in the statutes of the Constitution or the Bill of Rights, but the Justice Department itself has created a precedent that prosecutors, judges have immunity from prosecution, even if they've committed fraud. So we have to remember that. These people don't operate under the system that we're required to operate under. Secondly, they have judicial discretion, so they can look corruption in the face and rule in its favor and hammer down and push the case out of their court, even if it's totally corrupt, and even if it's got to go to appeal, because they have immunity and they have this discretion to rule however they want in the end. And that's the difference between an activist judge who will do that at any point they want to push their agenda, and another judge that rules by constitutional precedent.
This is a great place to explain the different tiers of judges and how they use these tierage systems to cover each other. Can you explain that?
Yes, we have at the base level, at the federal level, we have district courts. And there's typically, in a small state will have one, a larger states will have two, sometimes three, or even four, I believe. And then those are where the courts, the filings are first heard in a district court, and that's where you'll have juries. And or you'll have a what's called a bench trial, where the judge will sit in judgment over the case where the both parties have agreed not to have a jury. Okay, so then there's a decision made, and if either party wants to appeal it, they can appeal it to appeals courts, which are called circuit courts, and there it's a three-judge panel that hears your appeal. At that stage, the circuit court no longer hears facts. They only look at, this is the theory. I'm talking all theory here, because what we now know is there's a whole nother undercurrent of corruption where these judges are taking bribes and insider trading. But just on the surface, the circuit court then hears the appeal, and then the three-judge panel decides whether the lower court ruling is correct, or maybe it's partially correct, may send it back, may overrule it. They have certain things they do. And then if the circuit court decision is then appealed, then it's appealed to the Supreme Court, which hears actually very few cases that are filed with them. And that is, they're first submitted to Justice Roberts, and then he decides whether or not this case is going to move forward in the Supreme Court.
But in particular, the situation in Detroit, where the judge Linda, what's her name? Is it Parker?
Linda Parker.
Yeah.
Linda V. Parker.
But yet we looked at her and realized that she's not the thinker behind all of this. It's another guy, and he's a judge that is behind her or supervises her. That's the particular one. Can we use that as an example?
So, okay, that's at the district court level. There are judges in the district court, and this Parker is one such judge. And then there are magistrate judges, which are typically judges that move around among cases and are assigned as a secondary judge to handle certain aspects of a case. Like in our case, Magistrate Leonard P. Stark initially handled only the discovery part of the situation, and Joseph Farnan was the key judge. But Stark had no experience. Farnan had 25 years of experience. And so therefore you see that pecking order. But the Detroit Eastern District has a unique situation, and you've got this executive magistrate judge by the name of R. Stephen Whalen, who has been at that court since 2002 and appears to be the experienced one that they've assigned to this Sidney Powell case. And that's a little unusual. So rather than look a lot at Parker, who seems to have no experience other than civil rights cases and extreme racial activism, Whalen seems to be the one that knows the lay of the land and has been assigned to this case as well. And he is the one who actually has hosted many law students as interns from Wayne State University. And that's where Jocelyn Benson, at the ripe old age of 25, became an associate professor of law. And then by age of 35, she was the dean of the law school. Isn't that amazing?
Well, I thought what was really amazing is when you found the connection between Whalen and the Privy Council.
Yes.
Who would have thought that there would have been a Detroit royal connection?
There is. He takes these Wayne State students, and one of these students was specifically highlighted to start working in Europe, in London specifically, with a law firm by the name of DLA Piper. And as it turns out, that particular law firm is where Doug Emhoff, Kamala Harris's newly minted husband, worked. And so he actually worked for one of the owners, one of the directors of Dominion, who I can't remember his name now. I'll think of it in a minute. But in addition to that, he also worked with, I remember the name, it's Baron Collins of Mapesbury. And this particular Baron also works with DLA Piper and therefore has direct connections with Lord Mark Malik Brown. So there we see, and both of them are privy counselors. So there we see a direct connection with Wayne State University, with Jocelyn Benson, your Secretary of State, and with R. Stephen Whalen, the judge in this case.
Oh my gosh, are you talking about more foreign interference in our election?
Oh, absolutely. This is unquestioned. You can see it. And even the particular CEO of DLA Piper involved with commercial litigation and commercial arbitration works directly with this Baron Mapesbury, Collins of Mapesbury, and one of his prize students from Wayne State University who worked with Whalen was sent to England to work with Mapesbury, Lord Mapesbury. So you see this triumvirate between the Detroit courts, Wayne State University, Jocelyn Benson, your Secretary of State in charge of your election, and the Privy Council in England.
Well, this is a well-known path of grooming. And if you're going to be in the military and you're going to be in, have a top secret security clearance and you're going to get to high levels and you're going to get into intelligence, then you will have to go through what's called the War College. And then they'll want you to go to Oxford or Cambridge. Now, why Oxford or Cambridge? That's because that's part of the grooming, you see. What you've described here so beautifully with the judges and our whole judicial system is a form of monarchy come to America, and it's just hidden. It's hidden in our courts. These judges acting with judicial discretion, no, that's called breaking the law. And they think they can because judges rule in what they call their court. None of those are their courts. Now, in England, it's the Queen's Court. And matter of fact, Baron Collins, I think, was in the Queen's Court. Was
Queen's Counsel. That's right.
He was the Queen's Counsel in the Queen's Court. Where everything, everything goes the Queen's way in the Queen's Court, okay? That's the way it works, folks. If you're in the Queen's Court, you are, might as well say, you're on the Privy Council in the Cabinet and basically doing the bidding of monarchical British imperialists. And the way that it comes to America is you or I can't really stand in front of a judge. They'll throw you out because they have discretion, as they call it. No, we don't have standing because we don't have a fake aristocracy, which lawyers have called being an esquire. So when you're an esquire, you can then, you know, because you have sworn to the bar, and the bar goes back to the City of London and all that that means, Temple Bar, the whole thing. But the point is that judges rule. Well, who did that before? The Pope, with encyclicals, that the Pope, when he speaks with his curia behind him, it is the word of God. He rules. And that became, of course, canon law. And canon law was a replication of Roman law. So we are still living out the shadow of the Roman legal system. And what we've done is we've allowed there to be a monarchy. These judges are appointed for life in many cases in America. They get to do whatever they want. They can barely be impeached. And they are like the Pope. They make encyclicals. When they speak, their word becomes law. Now, what we've pointed out, these new rules established by a judge, and then they become, of course, case history for people to build upon, essentially, they're bad laws. And what that amounts to is when you create a bad law, it affects so many people that it incites demons to come and dwell in those laws and those legal decisions. And so that's what we see all the time in America. In our court system, where you think there's going to be justice, you actually see demonic laws that become more draconian by the temperament of the judge, depending upon, as I always say, what they just had for lunch. Because literally, when you're in courts long enough, and I've been in them for too many hours, too many days, it is simply insanity. These judges do whatever they want, and they think that the court is theirs, and that they can cuss at people, they can yell at people, they can make capricious decisions based upon no evidence. As you said, they can just say all evidence doesn't count now. Why? Because I said so. And that's simply a bad Roman Catholic monarchical system of aristocracy that came to America controlled by the British. And so anybody who's going to get into intelligence or heavy politics or international politics must go through their British brainwashing, their British grooming. And it is absolutely disgusting that in America, where we believe in freedom and liberty, that our court system is so stacked that judges get away with murder, quite literally.
Well, they do. And here's one good example, probably the ultimate example of the depravity of this system, is that we have abortion in this country because of a Supreme Court ruling. We, the people, didn't make that decision. And that court should not be able to make a decision like that. And yet we've lived with it and we still have it today. So, I believe that is going to be part of God's judgment on the U.S. because we've allowed helpless babies to be terminated by a ruling of the Supreme Court.
Or by the vaccines given out by Bill Gates and his money. You allow a guy like Bill Gates, who's never done anything in his life, to act as if he's a doctor, as if he's a globalist eugenicist, that he's the person who's bringing a green program to Africa, but in fact trying to kill Africans, that he gave a new polio shot out that caused thousands of people to get polio. No, what we're seeing is how pervasive this globalist evil is. And when you say globalism on this level, we're talking George Soros gave $18 billion to non-government organizations a couple years ago to try to make sure. First off, he spent billions trying to get Trump. I think he spent over personally $6 billion plus a $1 billion bet that Trump wouldn't win on the stock market. So he gave $6 billion to make sure Trump wouldn't get in. Now he gave, during Trump's administration, $18 billion to non-government organizations, endless money for Antifa, endless money for Black Lives Matter, endless money for all these organizations that are highly partisan and basically doing the work of George Soros's Open Society Foundation. And remember, Mark Malik Brown, number one election rigger in America and the world, is a founding member of Open Border Society. George Soros's foundation, and Jeffrey Patty, all of them, they're all sitting in the same place in a little room in London having tea, talking about the way that they are literally taking over countries, stealing elections, using predatory economics to wipe out countries, leading color revolutions with intelligence on the inside and private intelligence on the outside. And taking everything that the Brits, Canadians, Australians, New Zealands, and Americans have, Five Eyes, sharing it with Israel, sharing it with Iran, sharing it with China and the Russians, absolutely 100%. Huawei is listening into everything Five Eyes is doing with Britain right now as we speak, and they've done nothing about it. They've discussed maybe in the next couple years they'll stop allowing China to spy on everything that the Brits do. That includes all their intelligence, their military, everything. So what we're seeing is how pervasive this is. And what's a little bit shocking to people, and first off, I want to state that these are traitors. Every one of these groomed people that believes that our special relationship with Britain makes British equal to American citizens, you're incorrect. They are a foreign nation who has gotten us into more wars and more deaths than any other nation on the face of the earth. But when you look at the pervasiveness in Trump's administration, he had to fire the guy who was supposed to be watching over this, the cyber infrastructure guy. Recently, he fired him. He's moving people around out of the Department of Defense, out of the National Security Council, so on and so forth. Why? Because DOJ, though they were put on high alert for this election, saw nothing, did nothing. Neither did the State Department, which is supposed to be looking at elections, both foreign and domestic. How about the CIA? They should have stopped it if it was actually happening. How about the FBI? Well, of course, they're totally out to lunch. How about Homeland Security, who has the ultimate control to synthesize all information from all these other agencies I just mentioned so that they can stop fraud? Okay, did they do anything? Did they have a report? Anything going on there? No, nothing. How about the National Center for Counterterrorism? No, even had to move him. So everybody's being moved around because they're all failures. The only people Trump has been working through, and notice almost all of his executive orders having to do with elections or any kind of fraud or interference or national security interference, goes back to sanctions. The U.S. Treasury, the U.S. Treasury Office of Information Analysis is what he works out of, and that's the reason you'll see sanctions. He does everything economically. That's the only thing that he actually has control of. The rest, he's fighting this on his own, but it doesn't matter. The 11,000 affidavits are all that is needed is the evidence that is a preponderant amount of evidence that they cannot analyze, but even circumstantially would have to demonstrate there was fraud. So we go to our default, and the default is a system where we deny the Electoral College their votes that they're casting because of, and this is built right into the law, because of fraud.
Yeah. In my experience, we can't count on the courts to do anything. They're going to go through the motions. And because we see who the judges they're assigning to these cases, we can't expect anything but obfuscation and obfuscation. We're not going to, nobody should hope that a lawsuit is going to achieve anything except a neutral outcome, in my opinion.
Let's take a moment and look at the really big picture, because what we're seeing generally out there in the internet is a lot of people are pointing to China. And China may have a role in this, but why is it that so few people are looking at Britain? Now, we have heard the recent videos that Harley Schlanger has done, and he talks about the British, but he doesn't go as far as naming the pilgrims in these videos. And why is that? Harley Schlanger, if you're listening to this, are you out there to protect the pilgrims? Why aren't you talking about them, Mike?
Well, I think I've asked that many times, and it's so obvious when you actually look at the facts that the pilgrims are the one driving this. And for example, if the pilgrims aren't a player, then why is it that in 2007, Henry Kissinger was made a vice president of the Pilgrim Society in New York, as was, Paul Volcker. So if they were just some sort of dinner group or inconsequential group of old men getting together to have tea and smoke cigars, then why is it that Kissinger and Volcker would have pushed everyone out of the way to make sure that the Pilgrim Society was in control when they did the 2008 bank bailout? That is a fact. And we now look back and we see that the entire cabinet of Richard Nixon were all pilgrims. And then we go back farther still and we see that all of the leaders of the Marshall Plan at the end of World War II were pilgrims. And then we see these current players. It's difficult to know who the current pilgrims are because they haven't published their membership of late, but we can go back about 10 years and start seeing those facts and realize that the Pilgrim Society is, I think, like Voldemort.
No, they're a terrorist organization is what they are.
Yes.
And their terrorism is worldwide. They're the head of all this terrorism and war and all of that.
Yes, it's like the name that cannot be named.
And well, that's also Mark Malik Brown. You mentioned that, and you know, but other folks in the internet, they're going, "Whoa, Malik Brown, who's that? Sounds a lot like Moloch." So you see already our warriors, our information warriors, our keyboard warriors are already ahead of them. So they won't talk about it. Well, we're going to educate our people out here about how evil that guy is before he ever comes out in the news. You know what I'm saying? It's an information war, and we have to provide the cutting edge information in order to educate and enlighten the patriots on the ground so they can do the same with the others, so that the next time that Alex Jones has Harley Schlanger on a show or wherever Harley's going, you've got an audience asking, why aren't you talking about the pilgrims?
Well, I think China is the current whipping boy for anything the British want to do through a surrogate. And not only the British, but also the CIA. So we've got this same group of people, intelligence, media, tech, driving their agenda through others in the propaganda world so that you never see them. You never name them as the Pilgrim Society, but you call them the Chinese, or you call them the Russians or the Iranians. Now, they use those people, I'm sure. And so therefore, it's not like they're not a part of it. But as we know, China itself is a creation of the CIA. We know that. That's a historical fact. And have we ever seen something that the CIA created and British MI6 and therefore the Pilgrim Society? We've done that history. We know that's the fact. We never see them taking responsibility. They always have one of their surrogates take the big hit politically. But I think this time around, Harley's latest interview today did everything but name the Pilgrim Society. He talked about their behavior, who's in it, everything else. So I think that that's the deafening silence of the entire story of this global action to create a new world order. And that is, it's a creation and always has been of the Pilgrim Society, but they don't want to be out front with their story. That's what I see.
Absolutely. And as we pointed out in our previous broadcast, Eustace Mullins wrote the definitive book on the world order. And in it, he names all of the evil people. And then John Coleman came along and he wrote the conspiracy theory on the Committee of 300, which is not a conspiracy theory because he names every member of the Committee of 300. And who does he say, who do both these people say are the leaders at the time that they were pointing at? Henry Kissinger and Volcker, because they were also the leaders of the Pilgrim Society. Now, why don't they say the Pilgrim Society? Because I don't think they understand that that's their communication vehicle for the marching orders for the globalists. I don't think that these people get that. And Lyndon LaRouche, who, of course, Harley Slanger is a follower of, and who I've been following for a long time, of course, I understand LaRouche's limitations. And one of the limitations is he's kind of hooked on a certain point of view, which is kind of racist and a little bit skewed at certain points. So he can't quite get the fact that he's not going to point out, well, Eustace Mullins just whispers it, that it's actually a cabal of Jews. But in fact, when you look at it, it just so happens many of them are Jewish, but that's not the issue. And if you turn to anti-Semitism, you will be completely ignored by everyone. So what we have is the Committee of 300, or the World Order, written that LaRouche built a lot of his beliefs upon. They were limited. They didn't give LaRouche the insight that has been found by looking at the Empire Press Union, their first meetings, and the way that intelligence and the mainstream media became one in Britain. And then that became pervasive to the entire world. But we got to remember that the Brits have the long term in mind. They groom for generations to come. And so all the brightest people are invited into these. When I was in the NSA, they invited me to go to the War College, and they invited me to use my GI Bill to go to Oxford or Cambridge so that I could get the proper brainwashing so that then I could work in higher aspects of intelligence, signals intelligence. I didn't want to do that. I could see what that was. And the Pilgrim Society, up until the time that the miners, Michael McKibben and his miners, came up with the fact that they are in fact incorporated as a not-for-profit organization in America, that then makes their activities illegal. Until then, they could have been a dinner club that just happened to have a terrible British imperialistic eugenic approach towards the world. But let's remember, the British are everywhere. When they say China gave to Dominion, the election company, money as they were in trouble for being sued for fraud, of course, again and again and again, they went to HSBC. And then they're going to yell, China, China, China. Hello? That's as much British as it is Chinese. You can't say China without saying Britain. You can't say Russia without saying Britain. So when you're talking, you can't say Iran without saying Britain. You can't name an enemy of America that the British aren't actually behind when you look deeply into the history of it all.
You mean HSBC, where James Comey was chief counsel before he became FBI director? I mean, exactly. It all goes back. So whenever you hear something about China, one of the things we never talked about several years ago is when we uncovered the ownership structures of many of these companies that Mark Malik Brown is a director on. And there's a whole series of organizations that do nothing but build banking software out of London, and not just London, but Southern England. And it turns out that these accounting systems have all included carbon credits into their DNA structure of how the software works. And some of these softwares are in operation in Europe right now, where they're actually doing carbon credit accounting. For instance, in France, a lot of the Rothschild-owned companies already do that kind of accounting. And we also discovered that the main Chinese bank also uses that same software. So we see this total global control of the underlying infrastructure, and it's got all kinds of layers of propaganda on top of it to hide it. But underneath, we see the same people that Lord Mark Malik Brown is helping drive through the Privy Council. And I'll also point out that the Privy Council is about 700 people. So you said there was a group of 300. I posit that group of 300 is within that Privy Council list of 700.
Oh, absolutely. Certainly the major players are beyond a shadow of a doubt. And this goes back to Bretton Woods. This goes back to when Harry Dexter White, who was a communist, laid out how the Federal Reserve, World Bank, the International Monetary Fund was all going to work. And he fought with the British economists who said, no, we already have this solved. There's going to be one world currency. And then Bretton Woods destroyed that because it was actually a communist plot to destroy America by allowing the U.S. Federal Reserve, the World Bank, the IMF, and the United Nations to drain America, to gut America, to bleed us dry. And who runs the UN? That would be the Brits. So when we're talking about carbon credits, and you brought that up, you might as well say carbon credits are the globalist British tax on every being. They have it calculated down to your body weight and size, how many carbon tax credits you're going to be charged for any kind of emissions from your body, for the food that you eat, for they're going to assume that you use transportation. They've got this all calculated. And as you say, it's the Brits who have it calculated. So you want to talk about somebody getting absolutely desperate. Look at Prince Charles, look at the UN, look at anybody, look at Klaus Schwab, look at George Soros. They're crying. Please, climate control must come into place. We have 10 years left or we're all going to die. So if you don't go to carbon credits, it's all going to go to hell. And they're just going nuts because they had it all set up for a long time. And it's not working out because of Trump.
What they're really saying is our software won't work.
Exactly. No, what they're really saying is they have a fear of dying, and they're the ones that are going to be off world, not the rest of humanity. See, they're projecting their own fear. They're getting boxed in. They're getting in the corner. See, we don't know because we don't have a media that reports the truth, and they are a part of the problem. They're the enemy. They spew propaganda and that's it. But because they don't tell us things, we don't know what Trump is doing behind the scenes. You know, has he already put sanctions on the members of the Pilgrim Society? We reported a while back ago where that nonprofit was located. So, but how would we know? And that's why it's so confusing right now. And I know why people are so concerned, because you can't get truthful news anywhere. And then you have sites all over the internet spewing the craziest disinformation, propaganda. Right. Look, folks, calm down. What you need to do is every morning, or when you feel the urge to find out what's going on, you go into Donald Trump's Twitter account and you see what he has to say. And then if that's not enough, you come over to the Cat Report. And good luck if you have any time after that to see anything else. But I'm saying this, we always told you that there would be this period of time where you really wouldn't know what was up and down.
Yeah, the amount of propaganda right now is just off the charts. Not that I think the difference is we've always had it. We're just more aware of it now. So it's harder to know what's what. But I take great comfort in the idea that Trump said something very strategic. He said, when somebody was asking him a question about the future or what he was going to do, he said, I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do. So I have the belief that he's not telling us because it's not the right time to tell us. And that this he was waiting for this massive fraud to expose the different players at every level. And that's what's happening right now, is that these minions that have been buried in our judicial system are now having to come forward and actually put their name on lawsuits and therefore expose themselves.
It's called top down, bottom up. Because what's happening right now is in the grassroots, people are waking up, realizing the gravity of this election rigging, okay, Democrats and Republicans. So that movement is moving up. And then you have Donald Trump, who's not yet spoken about the issue. And when it comes, it's going to, those two of them are going to meet. That's it. Game over.
Yes, and it's important to remember that the Brits are doing everything they can. They even took their deputy prime minister, X, and sent him over to take care of public affairs at Facebook, Nick Clegg. And before that, they sent Richard Allen.
Sir Nick Clegg, Douglas, come on.
Sir,
right.
Sir. And isn't Rick, little Ricky Allen, isn't he something fancy?
He is the European vice president of communications.
And so they've sent their best people over to try to control us for the election. They sent the Atlantic Council's $1.5 billion for the truth checkers, the fact checkers that are everywhere now. Eric Schmidt point, he's spent over $3 billion rigging every Google search that you want to do. Already has algorithms in it that guide you towards leftism, period. Then you have the Strategic Communications Laboratory, which was behind the Russian interference meddling hoax. They were the Russians. There was no Russians. They were British. And then you have Cambridge Analytica that tried to set up Trump, which is a sister company of...
A subsidiary
of Strategic Communication Laboratories. Well, they're British. You have so many Brits. You have, for instance, they keep saying Smartmatic. No, incorrect. Smartmatic wasn't what was involved this time. Smartmatic has been bought by one person, and it's now called SGO Smartmatic, and it's owned by Mark Malik Brown. So when they say two Venezuelans own it, that's disinformation. Get the facts right. And when they say Seidel did the calculations in Barcelona and Frankfurt, yeah, but first they went to Ireland. I mean, this is absolutely insane when you see how much anarchy has been involved with these elections in the past and how much it has literally become standard operating procedure. For instance, in Detroit, people have testified that this has been going on forever. They have no intent to count the vote properly. They simply come up with a fake number that is hundreds of thousands more than all the people living in Detroit. And that's how many Democrat votes were cast. This was found out in the recount with Jill Stein and Hillary Clinton when they reached Detroit. Same thing happened. More people voted for the Democrats than there were Democrats in the city. Man, woman, child, and probably dogs and cats too. And certainly a lot of dead people. So we can see that this has been going on for a long time, since the 70s. It's the same people, and they need to be prosecuted. It's a very small group of people that, unfortunately, for the British, it goes oftentimes back to the City of London.
Yeah, and these people are not new people. They've been, some of these people, like Sir Geoffrey Paddy and Lord Mark Malik Brown, Sir Nigel Knowles. There is a fairly small group of people that are really driving the bus out of Southern England, and specifically Fleet Street, which is on one end of it is the Bank of England. On the other end is the various media. And in the middle is the Inner Temple, the law. So they've got it organized so that they could actually walk to their meetings. That's how central this is, and it's not that many people. So when some people ask, well, what's this going to do to Brexit? How's this involved with Brexit? And my view of Brexit is the intention is by these people never to let Brexit happen. And not just philosophically, practically speaking, those software companies that I mentioned earlier, that Malik Brown controls, are already deployed all over the planet, in Australia, in New Zealand, in Hong Kong, in China, in Europe, in England, and they're already operating. So the only thing they can do is make sure that Brexit doesn't happen, so they don't have to completely alter their whole situation until they get Bitcoin implemented. So then they've got their world currency, and then they can really consolidate power at that point. And Trump is a bad boy, because he is disrupting this. He's a disruptor of this whole system. And so when we hear them say that he's dangerous to democracy, I hear that all the time. First of all, we're a republic and not a democracy. And that in itself, I think, is a bit of propaganda to get people used to the idea of giving up on a republic, so that we will meld into this tyranny of the majority, which is the only people that's going to have a voice in this future new world order. And so we hear all of these statements that Trump is a disruptor. He's dangerous to democracy, that he is unhinged, and all these labels. Well, if you're the person that he is going to upset, I can understand why you would say that. But they know that the average American in the street, who is an honest person, is not going to interpret their words that way. They're going to interpret them as, maybe he is dangerous, and maybe I should pay attention to what these people are trying to tell me. And I think what we've got to do is close our ears to that propaganda and make sure that you question everything you hear, and mostly assume that whatever they're trying to tell you, the truth is the opposite of what they're saying.
And going back to the question I asked myself earlier, rhetorically, was how is it that so many people could be involved in this criminal activity? Well, here's what happens. Trump effect. They see their faults and their illegality, and they project it onto Trump. So whatever name they're calling Trump, that's who they are. And that's okay for a Democrat, because they use any excuse that they can come up with so that they get to bend the rules or the laws for them, but not for others. That's really the basis of our left, of our liberals, is we want to bend the rules until we're the ones who just make up the rules capriciously. And that's what we're seeing here. And it's really actually sedition, insurrection, and these are traitors. And everyone, whether they're from Canada with Dominion coming from Canada, or SGO Smartmatic coming from Britain, and on and on and on, those are foreign actors who are actually assaulting us. They are acts of war, and they are basically trying to take down our own national security across the board. Because if you can affect the elections, you can affect the outcome of the way that a country will evolve. So what we see here is that we believe that even the pandemic, which of course, remember, the British are connected to Perbright, they have the patent on coronavirus 19, and we have traced all of that back, and it's the same people, same small group of people in the pharmaceuticals and the election rigging, in the banking. And, you know, what we're pointing at here now is that we're going to win. Because this is the Trump effect. Whatever it is they're going to accuse him of, they're going to get caught doing themselves. Now, because the federal government is completely corrupt because of the senior executive service members ruling it, will we see action on that level? Perhaps not. Perhaps we'll see it on other levels. But one thing's for sure, Trump is in the right. There was fantastic fraud. The pandemic is a lie. And the globalists are literally pulling out every stop so that they can do anything they can to stop Trump. Because if they can't, if he gets in a second term, that's the end of globalism.